Mind program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show here in Marshall, North Carolina. In person, we have today Alan Staton, who is the owner of Cabin Creek Vineyard down in Zirconia, North Carolina. And for those of you who are geographically challenged, it's in southern Henderson County, about 30 minutes from Asheville. Welcome to the radio show, Alan.
Glad to be here, Chuck.
Well, you know, you've been around for a long time. We've been back and forth. As you know, we're both members of the French Broad Vignerons. In fact, I'll tell the radio audience out there that you've been the past president of the organization. But now you've entered a new phase down at your place. You actually have grapes in the ground, and you have intentions to have a winery someplace in the future. So tell us about who you are and where you are now and what kinds of things you're doing.
Well, Chuck, I started making wine amateur-wise about 20 years ago or so with my dad, just kind of throw it together, see what happens. Then about 10 years ago, got into more of the scientific method. That's kind of evolved over the years. We had some family property that we used to farm, and looking for a substitution crop to get away from, we used to farm sweet corn, and that kind of phased out back in the late 80s, and we had some nursery stock, and that phased out about 10 years ago. So started looking around for a crop, and I said, well, why don't we put some grapes in the ground? We like to make wine, so kill two birds in one stone. So about 5 years ago, we started putting some grapes in the ground. We got about 8 or 9 different varieties. Some Bacca Noir, Catawbas, Cabernet Franc. We got some hybrids, some native, and some vinifera. And hopefully, in a couple of years, I'll be opening a winery up there in Henderson County.
Let's talk about the grapes you have in the ground. When you talked about those specific varieties before, tell me how you came to choose those particular ones.
Well, North Carolina is kind of new in the industry, so to speak. I mean, 20 years is still new in the winemaking industry and grape growing industry. We're still learning our grapes in North Carolina. I had to do a lot of research, a lot of different classes and things. North Carolina offers some classes, and of course, the French Broad Vignerons have a lot of assets and information that helps tremendously. Some of it was hit and miss. I've planted some vines that didn't make it, planted some that exceeded beyond expectations. But trying to find, first of all, a grape that I liked as a wine, and then to see if it would grow here. Not every wine I like, the grape will grow here. Trying to just, you know, find what I like and find out if it'll grow.
So variety by variety, tell me what you've learned so far about those grapes.
Hybrids and natives will grow very well here with minimal spray applications and things. You still have to kind of spray some for Japanese beetles and our biggest threats, mold and mildews.
You got a lot of black rot down your way like we do up here?
Got some, especially after these warm late springs, early summers, the rain comes in, just humidity. We have a lot of rain here in western North Carolina. If you've lived here long, you know that.
Yeah, we're getting our share of it right now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. If you go with a native variety like Catawba, one good thing, they grow faster than the weeds around them. So we try to get some grapes that's going to do well, because you're going to spend a lot of time in the vineyard just training the grapes, mowing. You know, I heard a joke years ago that as a vineyard owner, you're kind of a glorified lawnmower in a way, because most of your time is going to be mowing grass and weeds.
And weed whipping. I've managed to cut down a few of my vines before I figured out to put that little piece of
put a little pipe down
around it.
Been there, done that. In fact, I hit one last week. So,
oh boy,
you sit there and kind of cuss yourself on the inside and just keep it going though. So
how many acres do you have now?
Roughly, we have about 4 acres. Last count. Try to expand a half acre to an acre every year. Just getting them up and trained is time-consuming. This past week, I was training, getting some Catawbas up on the wires. I got a little behind this year, just rain and everything, but just doing our best to keep ahead of the storms and keep ahead of the weeds.
I'm not familiar with growing Catawbas, but I've had some Niagaras, and I think they're sort of like that.
Very similar. They both grow
very vigorous.
Very vigorous. You have to, you know, get into pruning methods. The cane pruning is probably the best method on that, just to keep the vigor down. Spur pruning is not cutting back as much, and but canes, it kind of takes a little bit of that vigor and pushes towards the grapes more instead of the vines.
Well, I know Catawbas and Niagaras are very, very aromatic.
Yes.
We have a few growing here out behind our place, but in addition to the muscadines that we grow, and the aromatic is nice, but it also attracts the bears from several miles away here.
Bears, deers, birds. And something about the Catawba is interesting. Back in the World's Fair in the late 1800s, a lot of people don't realize that the Catawba was entered into the World's Fair as a sparkling wine against French Champagne and other sparkling wines, and in a blind tasting, and actually won.
Wow.
Kind of similar to the 1976 blind tasting they had in France. And that's one of the reasons I planted Catawba, because I knew it grew well, and I knew it could make a very nice wine.
Well, we have some friends who absolutely love Catawba wines and are having trouble finding it, so when you get up and running, I'm going to have a customer for you.
Well, it's a wine that grows really well, so I'm going to keep going with that. And I do have some, you know, vinifera in the ground also to keep those diehard vinifera wine drinkers happy. We got some Cabernet Franc, which is doing really well here in North Carolina. To me, it's one of the best red growers as far as our season's long enough, they can reach maturity. You still have to maintain a spray routine or something with those, being vinifera.
What's your elevation there,
Alan? Somewhere between 2,100 and 2,200 feet. Okay. Right at 22, depending on what part of town you're in.
Okay, so you really have to pay attention to cold hardy down there at that elevation.
Yes, and that is one thing I did learn. I did make a mistake of 1 year leaving grow tubes on some newly planted vines through the winter. And it was a cold winter, and I was trying my hand at some Montepulciano, which is one of my favorite wines. The cold hardy rating on it matches dry region, but that year, when you have some winters, you got warm weather, cold weather, the grow tubes kind of let a little of the sap run, and then the cold got it. You know, have 1 week of warm weather in December, and then the next thing you know, January comes and it's 10 degrees. It's gonna have an effect. I think in the mountains, what we have to deal with a little bit is those temperature shifts during the month of January, February, where up north, the temperature's pretty constant. You know, upstate New York, Long Island, those areas, the Finger Lakes, they got cold weather, but it's constant. We have some warm days. I've seen January hit 70 degrees before.
Yeah, we've seen that thing here. That's true. That wild swing in the temperatures wreaks havoc with growing grapes.
I had some of the Montepulciano that made it, but it really wasn't worth saving the little parcel I had of that, so I just kind of moved on from that.
Did you take them out?
I just kind of let the weeds grow up till I'm ready to replant.
Okay, so you are going to replace them.
I'll replace them with probably something else. Some of the other varieties is doing well, too, is Leon Millot.
Oh, yes.
They're doing well. I've got some Vidal for whites. I got some Vidal and some Traminette. Those are both hybrids. Mm-hmm. Traminette being a hybrid from a Gewurztraminer.
One of my favorite grapes and wines.
Yes. Very aromatic, too, just like the Niagaras and Catawbas. They got their own distinct smell.
What are you doing to keep the animals out of your vineyard?
I haven't had a lot of trouble right now. Biggest trouble I've had was last year during harvest, some blackbirds. Mostly after, I was trying to let the grapes hang, get a little more sugar in them. Got a little bit of rot in them, and then the birds came in. Probably cut my first little crop there in half before it was. And it's my own fault. I should have probably got out a little sooner and just got a little greedy with the sugar.
What kind of trellising are you using in your vineyard?
Different things for different ones. I'm using, for the Bacca Noir, I'm doing a double top wire cordon.
Okay.
Because Baccos are notoriously vigorous. So I'm trying to spread the canopy out a little bit. And they're a high producer as far as grapes per acre. The other, I'm doing some vertical shoot positioning with the VSP with Cabernet Franc. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just doing a single top wire on the Catawbas. And I'm trying a little bit single top wire with Baco too.
Well, for those out in radio land who don't know what a Baco Noir is, that's a very interesting grape. I had the pleasure of tasting some excellent wine that was made up at New River Winery when they had an operation up near Boone. I think Amanda Gentry was making it at the time. Fantastic wine, the Baco Noir. It suffers a little bit, as you know, from recognition as a name.
Yes.
It just doesn't roll off your tongue like Leon Millau. I'm sure a lot of people, even in the wine business, don't know what a Leon Millau grape is.
Yeah.
But it makes great wine. So there'll be a little bit of educational stuff you'll have to work on to try to get that rolling for you.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, you know, people in the wine business, you'll see where it says red wine or white wine. It's, you know, a lot of times that's not that it's one particular variety. Sometimes they'll name it that because of name recognition. It can be a great red wine, and if people don't know the name, they're kind of hesitant towards it. But if it just says red wine, they like it, they'll buy it.
What are you doing for a white wine? I know you got the Traminette there and the Vidal.
I got the Traminette, the Vidal. Catawba's kind of a pink. It's kind of in between red and white. Those are the two main whites I've got. I'm actually looking. I'm a little late this year, but probably next year I'm going to go ahead and address some pH balances in my field. And I'm looking at maybe some Albarino next year, which is a vinifera.
All right.
Because it's got a good cold hardy rating. I think it's cold hardy zone 6 and we're zone 7. So a lot of people don't know it's actually the world's most planted white grape.
Seriously?
Yep, it beats Chardonnay from last estimates.
Folks, we've been talking today with Alan Staton from Cabin Creek Vineyard down in Zirconia, North Carolina. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit. Most of our listeners these days are non-smokers, but we all have friends who still smoke, even though they know it is bad for their health. When our smoking friends come to our home, we always get a little nervous about asking them not to smoke in our own home. It makes it seem inhospitable, if you know what I mean. The perfect host now has a better idea to the awkward suggestion of, please smoke outside or please don't smoke in here, especially if it is winter and the wind is wailing across your back porch. Now you can offer your smoking guests the perfect alternative solution, Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit. Ina has packed her indoor smoking kit in a plain Ziploc sandwich baggie so it's small and easy to keep on hand in a convenient location, ready for your next smoking guest. The Ziploc baggie contains a large black plastic trash bag, a piece of string, and instructions. Ina confirms how easy it is to use and has tested it on her friends and relatives. Your smoking guest just places the black plastic garbage bag over their head and pulls it down around their waist. Then simply tie the provided string around the waist, providing a small private space for them to smoke and prevent the smoke from escaping into the room. Then they can smoke as much as they want without disturbing your non-smoking family members or leaving your carpet and drapes filled with that oppressive tobacco smoke smell. Ina says she can hear her guests talking clearly through the plastic bag as they smoke. Most of her guests who smoke don't come back again and whip out their cigs. Some just don't come back. Ina is working on a similar solution for the unwanted door-to-door salesman. Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit is another special product made in the good old USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall.
Today's program is being brought to you by Rufus Tincture for Vapors. Aunt Vicky was visiting her brother Barney up in Shelton Laurel when there was a terrible accident. Barney was mowing hay on a steep slope on his farm when his tractor rolled over and crushed his leg. His neighbor happened to see him from the adjacent field and come a-running. He used a locust post lying near the cattle gate to pry the tractor's fender off of Barney's leg so he could get out from underneath the tractor. When his neighbor brought him back to the house, Aunt Vicky took one look at Barney's crushed leg and came down with the vapors. Barney's neighbor reached into the chest pocket of his coveralls and pulled out a small tincture bottle. He popped the cork and held it under Vicky's nose. She sniffed it and her vapors immediately went away. When Aunt Vicky inquired what was in the bottle, she was told that an old hermit living up on Lightning Ridge named Rufus had made it for his wife because she was very prone to getting down with the vapors every time she saw a snake or a spider. Aunt Vicky set out to find the hermit and get her own bottle of tincture for the vapors. When she got into the old cabin where the hermit lived, she found Rufus lying on the front porch, dead as a doornail. After the kerfuffle of his burial died down, she went back to his cabin and found an old notebook stuffed in a crack between the log wall and the field stone chimney. It had the Rufus formula for the tincture for stopping vapors. Vicky saw this as her chance to make a new product and make a few bucks along the way. Most of her women friends came down to the vapors at least once a week. Having a tincture to quickly revive them would be a godsend. So she began making it for sale using her kitchen to whip up batches for bottling. She called it Rufus Tincture for Vapors in honor of the old mountain hermit who left the formula in his notebook. Rufus Tincture for Vapors is another unique product made in the USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Rufus Tincture for Vapors for $1.298 at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking with Alan Staton today. Alan is owner of Cabin Creek Vineyard down in Zirconia, North Carolina, about 30 minutes south of Asheville. So, Alan, just before the break, we were talking about Albarino. Talk to me a little bit more about that. You had some special statistics you were quoting about that grape.
Well, yeah, a lot of people don't realize. Everybody thinks white wine. They think Chardonnay's the big, that's the kind of the go-to white. In the European market, there's just Albarino is just, it's everywhere. And we're learning here. And, I'm going to try my hand at planting some of it here, just to kind of see what it is. I'll plant a block of it next year. But it's a good all-around white wine. Dry, off-dry. And my motto is, if it's a wine, try it. You know, I'm not the one that goes and says, my three favorite wines is Cab Sauv, Cab Sauv, and Cab Sauv, because you just kind of want to paint yourself into a corner and miss out on some of the best stuff you could ever have in your life.
Well, I know you've done a lot of experimenting with wine. I've been to your wine cellar more than once and tasted some of your wonderful things there. Let's talk about wine making for a change. I know you've been doing some experimenting. Tell me about your wine making. What have you learned and what have you learned not to do in wine making at home?
The biggest thing I've learned probably would be let the grape go where it wants to go. Don't try to force it. Meaning, you watch your level, your sugar levels, and your acidity levels, and your pH levels in the vineyard, and you try to get those within a certain range, but sometimes it's not a perfect year. You know, you kind of have to work with a grape a little bit, and what's great about wine is every year is going to be different. You know, of course, that's why they have vintages. You know, you always hear people talking about, oh, this year was a grape vintage at this region or whatever, and it just because you're taking something natural and making something natural. As I think it was Martin Luther said, beer is made by man, but wine by God, and basically kind of meaning that you can take grapes and set them in a container and you're going to make wine. What kind of influence do we have on them as people? Is and my philosophy is keep everything as much in balance as you can and then let it kind of go its own way.
Well, for the folks out in radio land, they may not realize that a winemaker has a lot of tools at his disposal in order to take that grape as it comes out of the vineyard and turn it into something wonderful that we can drink out of a glass. The winemakers have something around 200 different tools that they can use, additives and so forth, to adjust for the pH, adjust for the flavor, adjust for this, adjust for that. So talk to me about some of the things you've learned about your particular grapes.
In North Carolina, what I've found, our grapes tend to be a little acidic, which is not a bad thing. For white wines, that's great because it helps a lower acidity. I mean, normally means a lower pH, which means more stable wine. They'll have a little bit more life to it. Sometimes you get a lot of acidity, and it can be a problem. But you can always you can balance it. Being in the South, we have a lot of sweet wines. Everybody likes their sweet tea, and they like their sweet wine. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you have a wine that's very acidic and tart, you can balance that. Either go with some save some juice back from your original crush and add that back in to balance back out, or you can sometimes use some sugar and stuff. Ideally, you don't want to have to, but you know, you work with the grapes you have.
Well, Alan, one of the things that folks out in the radio land may not realize is that you're a special kind of winemaker in the world. We call these people vignerons. These are the people who grow the grapes personally and then make the wine from the grapes that they grow, so you can observe what's going on in the field and to give you a heads up on what you can do as a winemaker to really make some wine out of it. And as you said, every year is different just because that's the nature of grape growing and the weather. If you were to take a look at something going on in a vineyard, Give us an example of something you see there that would trigger something you would have to do on the winemaking end.
Well, first of all, you know, a lot of people say that wine is made in the vineyard, and that's very true, because there's only a certain amount of things you can do to manipulate the juice from the grapes in the winery. You're better off trying to control it in the vineyard, and not really control it. You're watching that grape as it matures. You're watching the Brix level, the sugar level, and the pH. And once you're getting close to harvest, you're really keeping an eye on the weather. Last year, I lost some. I let it try to hang a little too long, trying to get my Brix a little bit higher, and I'd have been better off going ahead and picking. Alcohol content wouldn't have been as high. pH was a little bit low, as far as a little acidic. So I mean, it's kind of when you want to let it hang, is, you know, you're getting that. It's kind of a balancing act in the vineyard and in the winery both.
Have you tried making wine using liquid yeasts?
Yes, I have. I've had good luck with that, and I've also dry yeast both. And when you're talking about yeast, that's part of winemaking, is learning which yeast and experiment. That's what's great about learning is just trying something new. Maybe trying this particular yeast with this particular grape. I've used the Y yeast, Lauvin, different yeasts, and it's really kind of what you kind of get used to. But if you find something that works, make sure to write it down. Don't forget it. Older I get, the more I forget. So,
come on, Alan. We're starting to show our age here just a touch. We have a little gray hair going on here.
Oh, mine just falling out. It ain't turning gray. So.
Well, if you were to tell somebody about making wine at home, just as an experiment, it's 5 gallon, 6.5 gallon jugs, or carboys as we call them. What would your recommendation be for somebody who's just starting?
If you're just starting, the things you're going to... There's a lot of information out there. You can go to, you know, a local bookstore and find homemade wine books. Gives you a good base to start with. Biggest thing, sanitation, keeping it clean. If you get bacteria, this wine's going to go bad no matter how good your juice is. You're going to need some carboys. You're going to need some airlocks. Like I said, there's 200-plus tools out there you can use. But basically, if you can... And you can make it in a food-grade bucket and then transfer it to a carboy, lock off the air, and let it sit for 2 or 3 months. The ancient Greeks and Romans did it in clay pots, and we got all this new technology. We ought to be able to do it in glass and stainless and plastic. So,
I've seen wine made down in Australia using primary fermenter made out of 4-inch thick concrete walls.
Yeah.
It was like a little indoor swimming pool sort of arrangement, about 4 feet high and about 16, 20 feet across. And it's just there fermenting in the open. They put a canvas tarp over it at nighttime.
yeah, to keep the bugs out.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of, and that's a new kind of thing coming back, is a lot of concrete fermenters, not just primary, but secondary.
Wow.
They look like great big old concrete eggs.
Yep. I know you've been past president of the French Broad Vignerons, and we always give them a plug when we do interviews on the radio with folks who are in the organization. What would you tell people would be the biggest advantage of joining our organization?
Just the amount of knowledge, the knowledge base that's there, that's accessible. And meeting other guys that are interested in, have the wine bug. I make my legal share every year, and it's not like I have a glass every night, which I don't, but I enjoy making wine and taking something from that you've grown and turning it into something else. With the wine group, you have knowledge, people who grow grapes, people who make wine, and just people who like to drink wine. And, you know, follow that. You've got a sample, say, here, get an honest opinion. It's hard to get an honest opinion from your family. But you really, as a winemaker, you don't want somebody to tell you, oh, this is great, when really it's not. It's not to your advantage.
Yeah, you need some positive critiquing of winemaking. And I know that's one of the big pluses we've had when I'm talking to several other members of our organization, is they get this positive feedback. Even at a regular meeting, you bring in a bottle of wine you just made and say, hey, everybody taste this and tell me what you think, to get that feedback, because we're trying to get everybody to do better, make better wine, help them be better winemakers. So I see that as one of the big pluses of the organization too. And like you said, we have a large number of people interested in just drinking wine. They're certainly welcome, but we have commercial wineries as well as amateurs in the organization, so we can learn a lot from each other.
If you're just starting in it and have a bottle you want somebody to try, if they give you a critique, don't take it personally. Take it positive criticism. They want you to get better, and the only way to do that is tell you, you know, this is off a little bit, and You know, in our group, we have a lot of certified wine tasters from American Wine Society also. And they'll give you an honest opinion, not trying to hurt your feelings or nothing like that. But the hardest thing is making your own wine and telling what is right or wrong with it. Giving somebody a glass, say, here, taste this, and what's not quite right. Sometimes you just can't put your finger on it. And that outside help really can nail, and you're like, it hits. Yeah, this is what's wrong with it, this is what's right with it. The only downside is it takes you a year to get your next batch going. So if going harvest to harvest and not buying juice, but you know, that's where you got to write it down and remember it.
In my past, I've made some pretty bad batches of wine, and I decided to turn into grappa or something else. But
yeah, I've had a few batches to dump. So
it's all part of the learning process. But you learn.
Yeah, you learn too. And as an amateur, if it's sitting still, ferment it. Kind of a motto, you know, if you got dandelions, watermelon, strawberries, all kind of fruit wines and stuff. We're in the South. You can go out and go to the grocery store and buy a decent bottle of blackberry or strawberry. You know, I know everybody remembers Boone Farm Strawberry Hill. But when you want to try to make it on your own, I've had bad experiences trying to make strawberry wine. Put a yeast in it that was too strong, that was really vigorous, and not enough nutrient to feed the yeast, and next thing I know, I got hydrogen sulfide in my strawberry wine. It smells like a rotten egg. The only thing you can do is just dump it. You learn. That's what's great. You learn, and you go and hopefully make everything better the next year.
Well, what is your current target for having your winery?
I'm looking about 2 years out. I have my property. Got an acre and a half. Half of that is Cab Franc grapes and Dornfelder, which is another vinifera, a German vinifera. I'll be putting my winery on. I'm hoping, don't know if it'll be open in 2 years, maybe breaking ground in 2 years. I'm kind of hoping my vineyard will catch up and I'll have a good enough harvest every year to be able to supply the winery. Worst thing I want to do is be selling wine and run out of wine. It kind of defeats the purpose of having a winery if you don't have any wine. So.
Certainly appreciated your being with us on a radio program today. A lot of people who are listening in can learn some interesting things from you, and hope this has been informative. So, again, thanks for coming, and we really appreciate your spending time with us on a radio show today.
Not a problem. If anybody's got any questions, want to shoot me an email. My email is cabincreekvineyard@gmail.com. Check it about once a week or so, but I'll get back with you if you've got any questions or anything. So be glad to help.
Super. Well, folks, we'll call that a wrap for today's program. Thanks for tuning in.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers! Thank you.